ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
ABC AFL Daily for your Tuesday. Corbin Middlemass and Bob Murphy in the house, and Michael Voss is gone as the Carlton coach. It's always a big day when a senior coach leaves their post. Bob, it feels like no matter how predictable it seems, it always lands pretty heavy.
Yeah, it's a sense of deja vu, isn't there? You know, we've lived through this so many times, it's almost a staple of the footy year at some point. The news came in early this morning. We were live on air doing the breakfast show, and it was that unusual combination of being shocked and not surprised.
Yeah.
If I know that's an oxymoron, but that is almost how it feels, because it seemed like a fait accompli, but when the news actually lands, your mind races and think, oh, it's, you know, the enormity and the significance of it is at your doorstep.
Certainly the case for media people, but I'm sure it's the same for average footy fans and even a lot of Carlton fans today, where you almost feel like, right, this is happening, this is happening, this is happening. Then as soon as it happens, you get this sadness that comes over you, where it's not that you forget that it's a human game or anything like that.
No, the humanity of it does
break through, doesn't it?
It does. It does become unambiguous.
Yeah.
You know, where before, you know, we're watching, and there are certain times where you're watching Carlton play and the cameras are so close to Michael Voss and you can just see him in that awful predicament. And the human element is very much, you're aware of it there. It's not pleasant to watch and you feel for the guy. But it's also convoluted by, well, they are underperforming and how's my team going and, you know, what's the problem there and all of those sort of things. Whereas today, we're just kind of left with the man, the coach, and he's stepped away because they couldn't get it done.
Now, there's a whole lot to pick apart on this front. We will get to the footy shows on the Monday night in just a moment. But so Voss finishes at Carlton with 49 wins, 53 losses, one draw. So 48% was his winning percentage. He coached the team in two final series, that memorable run in 2023 where he took them all the way to the prelim. From the lower reaches of the eight, by the way, they faced elimination week one and two. And then in 2024, they had their pants pulled down in that elimination final. And obviously, they never made it back there. So finishes with 212 games coached across his two stints. Obviously, early on in Brisbane, 09-13, had a long time away as a senior coach, was in the media. Then he went back and did a big apprenticeship after he'd been a senior coach at
long
Port Adelaide.
Stint.
Comes back and coaches the team in 2022 onward. So in his fifth season, what are we, 9 games into the year with a 1-8 record, he leaves as Carlton coach. It's been a big 6 months alone, really, when you think about the Curnow trade at the end of last year, whenever you ship your superstar forward off. Then he went into this year off contract, and really, even in all our interviews with Graham Wright and top brass at the Carlton Football Club, they weren't really able to articulate how he would get a new deal, what he had to do, what they wanted to see from him. Were they a top 10 team? You know, where the Carlton board certainly thought that they were at. And then as the season panned on, it became more and more apparent. There was the North Melbourne game in round 4, which to me felt like the game, even though it was so early on. The Collingwood game in round 6 was the same thing. And if anything, the Elijah Hollands episode obfuscated the greater issue that was happening at Carlton, where, you know, Nick Dacos had an outstanding and an otherworldly fourth quarter performance. And then there was the round 8 game against St Kilda, where it was almost at that point people were almost chuckling, thinking, here it is again, this case of the Carlton Football Club, where that the same thing keeps happening time and time again.
Yeah, the combination of 1 win, 8 losses, that speaks pretty loudly. But the combination of that with how you lose, and when, you know, to get a lead and to give it up as regularly as Carlton did, it's the worst combination you could want for if you're looking at through the lens of longevity as a coach. So that's why it felt like it was a formality that it would actually happen. And so now we look back on the coaching career of Michael Voss, and it's still so fresh, but it feels like we won't see him as a senior AFL coach again, which I can, you know, only imagine for someone who's poured so much of their life and time and energy into making a go of it, and he's been so successful as a player. He's an absolute legend of a player. But as a coach, it hasn't worked out. Two clubs in it in you couldn't give either of them a green tick.
It was interesting to hear Michael Malthouse speak this morning on Raf Epstein's show on ABC Melbourne, and he basically said, I think the one thing for Voss is he'll sleep as well tonight as he has at any time over the last 5 years, the sense of relief that would come with it. Well, I mean, he's had to withstand so much intense scrutiny, and to his credit, he's handled himself just about as well as you possibly could, where really, even in the last couple of weeks, Luke Ball told us on the weekend that, you know, he was fielding calls from journalists that were basically asking him about, you know, coaching processes to pick a new coach and everything else while Voss was still in the gig. And yet all these conversations were sort of people were racing ahead to the finish. And that must be an incredibly difficult backdrop to try and coach through.
Yeah, I mean, the interview that Raf had with Mick Malthouse, because there are just so few people who can talk to it, but just having observed senior coaches, when it turns, and it's, you know, clearly turned on Michael Voss in the last, well, call it, it's probably more than 6 months, probably 12 months really, he's had a dreadful time of it. It is a bit like a sick social experiment, isn't it, where so much focus is on that one person, there's so many cameras and there's a lack of control, and that team has been out of control for a long, long time. They just haven't been able to put it together. And by the time we got to the St Kilda fade out, it was like Carlton doing an impression of Carlton.
Correct. Yep, they'd become
a bad one.
Caricature of themselves. So 13 times since the start of 2024, they gave up a halftime lead. 15 times in Voss's tenure. So that's just two and a bit seasons. 13 times they cough up a halftime lead, and 8 times in Voss's tenure from three-quarter time. Have you seen a team like this at 1-8 where they've been in every game, and yet they clearly almost have this collective performance anxiety as a team that from winning positions, they just can't get it done and melt?
No, their team reset, individual or team reset, just wasn't trained enough. It wasn't strong enough. Their leadership on the field, off the field, just hasn't been anywhere near strong enough. And then it is partnered with opposition going, just hang in there, just hang in there, because they'll get wobbly. So they probably get the best of sides in the second half because sides go, we're a chance.
Yeah, breeds life into your
totally.
Opponents.
They've the opposition never feels, they never lose belief.
So 9 times this year, opposition sides have had a run on of 5 goals or more. So again, just haven't been able to arrest momentum. A couple of other offshoots. So I mentioned the Elijah Hollands saga. Do you think that's played a role in the timeline here while that investigation's going on? I mean, it was Carlton really marking their own homework and then handed it over to the AFL. There's still a WorkSafe investigation going on. I imagine when the club's dealing with a player welfare issue, it's pretty hard, isn't it, to make a decision on a senior coach concurrently?
Well, are we working off the information that he resigned or that he was sacked?
Probably that he resigned, I think, is the terminology.
But do you in all seriousness, do you think it was Voss going, look, I know, as you all know, that I won't be here next year, so I'm going to call it now? Or do you think it was like, mate, we're going to move you on.
Yeah.
Let's do this now.
Or unless, I mean, that we're going to get to Caroline Wilson's report around Ken Hinckley, unless Carlton have basically said to him, we all know that this is ending at season's end, but we as a football club need to start finding another coach. So if we're out there in the market and we're talking to people, that's going to be reported. And so does Michael Voss want that to happen while he's at least going through the facade of, you know, coaching the team week to week, even if he knows in the back of his mind he's not going to do it next year?
Yeah.
Then it gets really awkward for all parties, doesn't it?
Oh, totally.
If they're meeting and no other coach would want to meet with them. Like, if you're John Longmire or Ken Hinckley or whatever, why would you want to be seen at a coffee shop with the Carlton top brass where all of a sudden that gets reported as, you know, you're trying to knife Michael Voss, even if we, you know, believe that the decisions have already been made behind the scenes?
I mean, maybe it's semantics, you know, whether he resigned or whether they made the call. It's the same, you know, it's pretty close to being the same thing. That everyone knew that it wasn't going to happen next year, so they've made the call at this time. Getting the drop on other clubs for your senior coach, round 10 is really getting the drop, except the Tassie element is the curveball to that scenario, which I am intrigued about that. I'm intrigued whether you think there's a connection with the link of Ken Hinckley being favourite for Tasmania, and then the next day Vossi is finished up.
I'll come to that. Just one more thing. I feel like, and this is the time when a coach leaves is certainly time for retrospectives. We look back at it. The sliding doors moment of Collingwood looking for a senior coach, Carlton looking for a senior coach at the same time. And if you remember back to 2021 when all of this obviously went down, Collingwood were not seen as an attractive option.
Was that at the same time?
The exact same time.
Oh my God, I'd forgotten that.
And they were, Collingwood were basically paying guys like Grundy and Treloar to play at other clubs and moving on Jaden Stevenson. And Carlton at that stage, their president had made a captain's pick, and it was Ross Lyon, obviously, to come in and be the coach of the Carlton Football Club. So Voss is in the process with Adam Kingsley, with Craig McRae to be the Collingwood coach. Mm-hmm. And at that time, Graham Wright narrowed the field down to two, and Voss was basically discarded, and they said, he's not our guy. And then they did three more interviews, and Luke Ball sat on this panel with Kingsley and McRae, and they basically said, there's nothing between them, but we think McRae's a little bit more of the man-manager, sort mm-hmm. of friendly figure we need around the club. McRae gets appointed. In four completed seasons, he's taken them to three prelims and obviously won a premiership. And then Michael Voss gets the Carlton gig, which looked like this team's ready to explode. Yeah. In 2022, Jamie Elliott denied them on the last day of the season from qualifying.
Oh, this is churning my stomach.
2023, they make the prelim. Collingwood goes on and wins it. And obviously, Carlton, five goals up in a prelim. And they never get back there again. 2024, yeah, Pies miss the finals. Carlton play, but really anti-competitive mm-hmm. against Brisbane. And then we know what's happened since then from Carlton as the Pies have played in another prelim. It's an incredible sort of side-by-side.
Craig McRae, Michael Voss, amazing. Premiership teammates.
Amazing in how it all unfolded. Josh Fraser's going to be the caretaker. There is a press conference to come later today, which I'm sure you'll hear about across the ABC platforms. What we do on a Tuesday is we sit here and we go through all the... what do you call them?
Carnivorous.
The carnivorous footy shows.
The meat eaters on Monday night.
On the Monday
salad
night.
Salad dodgers.
I actually had this grab ready to go anyway, not knowing obviously what was going to happen with Michael Voss, but Nathan Buckley may as well give us the first word on the couch last night. I think he sort of hit the right tone, which might just put a full stop on all of this.
From experience, I know it can be difficult because you take a huge amount of responsibility as a senior coach for the current representation of your team, and it doesn't always... It's not always fully accurate. You know, I see Carlton as a team who's got great potential, but they're not quite putting it together at the moment. But I just think the way he's carrying himself has been first class.
I think we agree with that. Carried himself well.
Oh, I think so. Yeah, certainly. You know, the way he fronts up and presents. You know, he might not have got it absolutely note perfect every time, but I think it's easy for us to. Pick apart the way someone handles it. I think for the most part, he's probably grown in the last month, I think, in a lot of people's estimations of just in an awful situation. He couldn't get the job done. Yep. He couldn't get those players out of the rut. But in terms of fronting up to the reality of it, could never question that.
And even his comments around the bullying aspect, which I completely disagreed with the Elijah Holland stuff, but... I think if I was a staff member inside the Carlton Football Club and that was the guy out there that was at least seemingly defending us along this...
I think there's a footy club default of if you're going to be wrong in fighting for your corner.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. All right, to Channel 7 and the agenda setters. Caroline Wilson had this story, which ties in now beautifully with what we're about to chat about for the Carlton Football Club and... What comes next? This is to do with the Tasmania Devils and their first senior coach.
If I had to call it tonight, I would say that Ken Hinckley will be the inaugural coach of the Tasmanian Devils. He's not over the line, but he has been having repeated conversations with Tasmania bosses. He met with Brendan Gale and other bosses in Melbourne last week. He is by no means over the line, but he's emerged, in my view, as favourite as the board has ratified recently the list build philosophy. Slightly different to the way it was going to look. As you know, they get $5 million to sign on players over the first 2 years. The view now is that money will be spread over five players. The blend of youth and experience and these franchise players that the club is going to bring in, according to, I'm told, Brendan Gale and his board heavily favours Ken Hinckley. John Longmire is still very much in the frame, as is the early favourite Nathan Buckley, who has declared he wants to coach Tasmania. Ironically, Bucks would have got the job last September had Melbourne appointed him as senior coach because Tasmania would have pounced.
Does Ken want the job in your mind?
Yes.
What do you make of all that, Bob?
I was genuinely stunned when I heard that, and having listened to Caroline for, 25, 30 years, you could hear the conviction in her voice. I just thought the Buckley coaching Tasmania was a formality. That we were all just going along with this dance of like, okay, yeah, they haven't appointed anyone. Wink.
Yep.
It was Nathan Buckley. It sounds like, obviously, Ken Hinckley's very much in the picture. So I'm now sort of having to recalibrate just where I was at with the forecast for the Tassie Devils.
I thought when Bucks gave that grab or that extended chat with Dylan Buckley, and basically it got, as it often does in modern media, gets snipped up, and essentially you just see the little insert where he says, "Oh, if they offered me the job, I'd do it tomorrow," and everything else. It was probably once he said that where I thought, "No, maybe this isn't over the line." Like, he's almost just putting it out there publicly that, "Hey, I'm so committed to this," and they're not returning my phone calls in the way that you would want them to in a, at a dating prospect or whatever it turns out to be. So. Hinckley's a fascinating figure. So he's spent a long time at Port Adelaide, and it feels like, depending on who you ask, he either slightly overachieved or he slightly underachieved with Port Adelaide over a long period. So he had them.
Could it be both?
Maybe. Yeah. It's the eye of the beholder, isn't it? So he never got them over the preliminary final hurdle.
But he took them on when they were a basket case.
He did. And then people will argue, well, they were never a top three list in the competition, and yet I think they finished top three in four out of six seasons or something ridiculous. So. And clearly, you look at the relationship that he's got with guys like Zach Butters, for example, and it says a lot about him.
I wonder how much weight Brendan Gale and Tasmania give to his stint at the Gold Coast in those early years. Yeah. It seems like that's a part of the conversation. Certainly, that was the bit that Ken was willing to talk about. Obviously, it was just being sought advice around starting a new club. But it's an experience that Nathan Buckley doesn't have.
Yeah.
It's an experience a lot of other coaches don't have.
Is it important that Tasmania gets someone that can lead the club as opposed to just run the football program?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it needs to be like an established figure or...
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or someone that could get there in a real hurry.
Talk to me about the Blues. So what should they do? And if all of a sudden you see Hinckley being linked there, it means Buckley's now got 1 year of... Imagine Buckley at Carlton.
Can I?
You got 1 year of acumen, obviously, with the Cats. There's John Longmire. There's established coaches in Adam Simpson. Or then there's, we just spoke about Craig McRae. Graham Wright's run a very successful process before where his last two were Kingsley and McRae. Does he do that at Carlton?
Can I have a bit each way?
Yep.
So I'll give you, because you're a football intellect. You're an intellectual man, Corbin Middlemass.
Wow.
Yeah. I'll try and match you at your level. Okay. But then I'll tell you what I really want. Okay. Yeah. What I think will happen with Carlton's recent history and with what's happening with coaching at the moment, I feel like Carlton will go for a untried assistant coach as their senior coach. There's a lot of good ones out there. Ash Hansen's at the Blues. That probably hurts him, maybe. Daniel Jones, the Racusa, who's missed out. He's a dear friend of mine, so just that's worth putting out there. Corey Enright is one that I think will be interviewed.
Okay. Hayden Skipworth, all the usual names. And then it'll be some name that gets the job that we're not throwing
then,
around today.
There'll be, it'll be the... Ben Cameron from the clouds.
Be the Stephen King, Craig McRae type anticipated.
Yep. Jamie Graham from the Fremantle Dockers. That's where that storyline will go. So I think intellectually that's where Carlton will land.
Mm.
I kind of am barracking for Nathan Buckley, the Collingwood boy, as the coach of Carlton. Now, I don't want to be disrespectful because it's just literally Michael Voss has just resigned today. Maybe I've already been disrespectful. It's not my intention. But if I look into the crystal ball of next year, there's just something tantalising about Nathan Buckley being the Carlton Footy Club senior coach.
Yep.
That's not so much intellectual. I don't think that's likely to happen, but I do find myself being really curious about it.
You're also a media guy now too. So
totally.
As a media story, imagine the guy that ends up coaching Carlton, his first stint as a senior coach was because Collingwood didn't want to let him go and coach North. And so they essentially sacked the guy who's coached more games than anyone else in the history of AFL, VFL football in Mick Malthouse, who'd just taken his team to multiple grand finals and won a premiership the year before that. Essentially, they moved him on to get Buckley in to make sure that he wouldn't coach anywhere else. Then they sack Buckley, get another coach in who wins a premiership.
Mm-hmm.
Buckley goes into the media, ends up down at Geelong as an assistant, has to do a long way around the mountain to get back in the coaching ranks. And then he's a senior coach at Carlton. Imagine that as a media story.
So... and if Carlton are thinking about us, you know, in the media, then they should appoint Nathan Buckley, because look at all the storylines and content we could get out of it. Come on, Blues.
Exactly like the Melbourne process, exactly like the Collingwood process. That's what they got to do. Just run it. And if Buckley wants to enter, as he did there, by the way, you know, fair play to him. And same with guys like Longmire and Simpson. And if they all want to be part of it, enter the process. And if you win the job, you win the job. And if someone like Stephen King bobs up and ultimately, you know, outperforms the rest of them and wins it, fair play to him. I actually think what Bucks is doing is incredibly admirable. He's saying, hey, I want to be a senior coach again. He's gone back to upskill himself at the Cats. We see what he does in the media.
I think most things Bucks does is pretty admirable.
It's interesting. I've been lucky enough to work with him a couple of times in the last few years. And you do find yourself in the sort of rooting for different people, don't you? Where you go, I'd love to see him get the opportunity again at some point. The right job, the right time. Mm. To be a senior coach again with everything he's learned and from the first time around. All right, now Fremantle. Mm-hmm. You mentioned them a short time ago when we were talking about Jamie Graham. An unbelievable performance on Thursday night to start the round. Feels like a long time ago now, but it was it happened quickly. And it happened around the time that the big red button was hit for the Wharfie time, and all of a sudden the crowd activation, everyone was involved. But there was something special. It's hard to put your finger on exactly what it was. Gary Lyon had a go at trying to describe it last night on AFL 360.
This builds belief, Jared. We can throw all the stats at you, and I'm sure the boys will, and we can show you all the vision and all the different things. The intangibles sometimes are what separates good from great and great from premiership teams. And this is not a great team yet, but they are on their way, because this intangible of belief, resilience, you know, they'll sit in the room and look at each other and go, right, we know. Like the great teams that we played against back in the day, they just knew. They had an arrogant belief that they, from wherever they were, they'd be able to find a way. And that, now that, they haven't rubber stamped this, but that's what they've added to their makeup, to the way that, you know, their profile of a team. They can do this to you.
Have they got the secret stuff?
That's a fascinating insight there. And look, I spent 3 years at the Dockers, and it's interesting you mentioned Wharfie time. So I had a great view and an inside view of this team in particular, like club, but this team and at the core of it, these group of young players that wanted to reclaim a bit of the club's history, because Wharfie time and the anchor were objects of derision. Mm. And the club as a whole, but the playing group very much so, have wanted to reclaim it. Now, some people go, okay, well, how does that help you chase the ball? Well, for a lot of people in football, those things are important. Mm. They actually are the space between the spokes on the wheel, if you like. The intangibles, as Gary put it. What I'm so interested in, and I watched Fremantle really closely because I was there for 3 years, and I know the people and I know the players, and I love a lot of them and still in contact with them. It's a victory of belief. So now they have announced themselves to the league and themselves as, we are contenders. So that the belief can fill you up. Mm. But Fremantle, the negative or the question mark or the stereotype is that they can be weighed down by expectation.
Mm.
So round 10. So now we get to see them. Can they handle the expectation? Is what on the seesaw, does the balance of belief outweigh the weight of expectation? That's what I'm kind of intrigued about. But they're good enough, no doubt. The side is balanced. The coach has been there for 7 years.
Yeah. Do they want for anything?
No.
I agree.
No.
They play Brisbane in round 12. I can't wait for that game already. Fremantle making the trip to the Gabba. So before then, they play Essendon at the MCG this week. Then St Kilda in Perth. Short week, so Sunday to Friday. The Saints have got the same break. They're travelling. The Saints have been a little bogey team for Fremantle over a period of time. And then
the
Ross
factor.
Yeah, they play Brisbane at the Gabba and then North Melbourne in Bunbury before the bye. So I think that, like the great West Coast teams of the mid-noughties, that they got to finish top two, don't they? Like, it's get every advantage that comes with it. Stay at home. Make sure you don't have to travel for a month. Like, and this is the thing too, where you might feel like we're grading with a sharp pencil. We're talking about Fremantle about winning it. Like, mm-hmm. The conversation's not about, oh, can they make finals and win a final here or there or be top four? Like, it's time to do it. And there's no guarantee that you're going to be there next year or the year after that or whatever it turns out to be. But from this kind of platform, that they couldn't be a better place, could they, to give themselves every inbuilt advantage.
The opportunity is right there for them. But being the hunted is not the native tongue of the Dockers.
Yeah. It's interesting you talked about the history and leading into it. Like every time I hear Andy Brayshaw and talk about him staying there and being a Victorian along with Caleb Sarong, and they talk about, oh, you know, to be the first premiership team here is really special. And even Nat Fyfe spoke about that in the latter stages of his career. It clearly feels like something that you talk about the burden of history and the fact that, you know, St Kilda, for example, it's different when they walk in on grand final day compared to even Collingwood or successful teams, the Brisbane Lions, for example. You know, you're sort of carrying around this weight of history that you've never done it before, whereas it feels like they're almost trying to steer into the skid on that front, aren't they?
Yeah, and I mean, to be the first premiership player at the Fremantle Dockers in Western Australia, I'd never buy a Swan draft again over there.
No. But that is a motivating factor for them?
Absolutely. Yeah,
they know the significance of it.
There's been a whole heap of time, and I was there for 3 years, but I assume it's still very, like this connection to who they are and the symbolism of those things, the anchor, the song, Wharfie time, all of those things. More power to them.
Before our older listeners have just spat out their cornflakes listening to me reference Collingwood as a team without a burden of history, the Collywobbles, Hawthorn was the team I was searching for. Obviously, a team that rolls up and wins premierships for fun over the last 50 years. All right, to Channel 9 and Footy Classified last night, Damien Barrett speaking about the special dispensation for Scott Pendlebury ahead of his milestone game.
But there has been a special arrangement struck between Scott Pendlebury and the Collingwood Football Club, and it's been approved and signed off and fully ticked off by the AFL to have him make effectively 100% of proceeds that will be coming from the special wearing of the gold number 10. This is the AFL Tonight just confirming that this is a deal that's been struck behind the scenes. And basically what it means is that Scott Pendlebury wearing this specially designed gold number 10 on the back of his jumper, and he'll wear up to, look, at least 8 jumpers, I would imagine, in the course of the game, possibly more for his own keep reasons and for his also own on-sell reasons.
So 100% of the profits. Previously, this was split 65-35, player versus club. The percentages, the Pies have basically said, hey, 100% of it's going to go to Scott. He could stand to make a six-figure sum. So depending on whatever it is, there's talk about boots, up to a dozen Guernseys that he'll wear during the game, a wine label, special limited edition watch that could go along with it. It's a big deal or no big deal? I mean, the pushback here is this sort of getting around the salary cap, knowing that you've got this kind of an event coming up and a player, you know, stands to earn big bucks.
It's hard, isn't it? Because on the one hand, what you're saying is right, that, you know, this is a financial reward, a direct reward for a player that isn't on the table for any other league. And on the other hand, it's like, he's broken the game's record. This happens very, very rarely.
Yeah.
And is there anything wrong with a club trying to market and make money out of it? No. Is there an argument that, well, Scott played those games, so he should get the money? Well, yeah. So I don't have too much of a issue with it. There's just something a little bit, for a champion of the game who's just been, like, subtlety has been one of his greatest attributes. And the wine and the watch, it just, I don't know, it just feels a little bit...
I agree. The commercialisation of it all.
A little bit sort of, I don't know, maybe not as subtle.
Yeah. It's like I get all the multiple jumpers and go your hardest and everything else, but the outside stuff where you kind of think, okay, like, how many more dollars are we going to rip out of this or whatever?
Maybe it's just that, and you know, you don't want to sound like a knocker, you know, just to tear someone down, because we all love him and we all love him as a player and all those things. Yeah. But just it because of the, and we're having to wait so long, you know, we've had the equaler record. It is, you know, becoming big.
Is there a bit of awkwardness around that he's not playing this Friday night against the Swans?
Awkward for who?
Just the Pies, the conversation around it, like the fact that he's clearly in their best team. He's probably in their best, you know, 5 to 10 players, and yet he's not going to go up there and play on a 6-day break to essentially sit around and wait to break the milestone.
But 6-day break, you could 6-day break plus travel. I think there's enough argument there. So to answer your question, no, not that awkward for me.
I can't wait for the day. It's going to be awesome when he breaks it. And I'm a bit with you where it feels like we've heard so much about it and there's been such a long run up to it. I hope when we get there next week, we do get the chance just to celebrate Scott and worry less about all the rest of
this. There's a lot of talk of the gold number and now this dispensation, as you so well put it.
Yes.
And I think I'm just in a hurry to get to, show me the highlights.
Yep.
Tell me, let's talk hear about from his teammates and I want to get to that bit.
Yeah, let's talk about how great he is.
The limited edition wine and watch, I'm like, that's not really what I'm interested in.
That game, by the way, Mick Malthouse is going to work it for ABC Sport and Brent Harvey. So it's a pretty cool combination in the box. The guy that's coached more games than anyone else and the long time he's running mate in Brent Harvey is the guy who's played more games than anyone else.
Lest we forget.
And as he goes past the record, Boomer will be there on the call for us on ABC Sport. This weekend, we also have coverage, of course, of every single game every weekend streamed through ABC Listen, which includes the grand final rematch.
Mm.
It is the Brisbane Lions up against Geelong on Thursday night. The Budget replies on. So that's on ABC Radio. So if you want to listen to the footy, you can find it, of course, through ABC Listen in its entirety. Chris Colt was talking about it last night on AFL 360 on Coach's Night.
To be honest, I won't think about it that much and haven't really thought about that game. I'm a big believer that footy moves on pretty quickly. That game was a long time ago. Mm. And I certainly, those that do build it up, I sort of, and even with me, if I were to get a little bit emotional about it, you kind of ask yourself the question, so if you beat them, will it help? And if you lose to them, will it make any difference? Like it just, it would be nice if you could fix it.
Yeah,
but it's gone.
He said, I don't believe it's my job to provide short-term inspiration for our players. Sort of true to his usual brand, Chris Scott. Geelong and Brisbane, it's a familiar matchup. They met four times last year.
Cat fight. You can put that in your call.
Okay.
Because, big cat.
I like
cat,
it.
You know, just, I like it. That's for free. So, again, I'll give you some options here, Corbin. I'll give you a menu. Do you want me to give you an opinion as the company man that will bring in more of an audience for your call?
And
you don't want that.
No.
I would say there is no such thing as a grand final rematch unless you play in the grand final.
Yep. Yep, that doesn't mean anything.
No.
You played in 17, yeah? Sydney Bulldogs game. Was there extra feeling, extra spice after the year before?
Well, our boys won it in 2016.
Mm.
For memory, I think the cup was, or the flag was unveiled at that game. I didn't play in it. We'd won it. So I don't remember there being like, this being the...
But it wasn't like they came out breathing fire the opposition or anything like that.
I don't have any memory of that being the case.
So interestingly, the last four, as we love to say, research is not just a suburb. Premiers, the last four in the grand final rematch. So the result from grand final day is held up the next time around. It feels like we've got this image in our head that, there'll be redemption and here they come and everything else. And the runners-up have struggled in the grand final rematch over the last four editions. Bob, that's a bumper episode. It's always a big day when the senior coach goes at any footy club, particularly one of the biggest in the land in the Carlton Football Club. Thank you for joining me and picking it all apart.
Always a pleasure, Corbin.
This is ABC AFL Daily, 5 episodes a week. Don't forget, if you just listen to this one, there's 4 other drops that you can get throughout the week. So Thursday, our preview with Brett Delidio. On Saturday, it's AFL Saturday, Mick Malthouse and Luke Ball. Daniel Harford's in the chair on a Sunday night with Ben Cameron. And then, of course, on Monday, it is AFL Monday with Mark Murphy in the house. All available here through ABC AFL Daily.